What's up, guys? Welcome to the Kind of Funny Games cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Brap, brap.
The former informer, Imran Khan.
Brap, brap.
And the new face of video games, Blessing at Ayoye Jr.
Brap, brap.
I'm loving it.
Imran, I know it lives and dies by the natural light like I do. He looks like I am having a vision right now. Like the Holy Ghost is speaking to me. It's the third day Imran just rose from his grave.
I've noticed that like the shirt color I wear seems to matter for this thing. Simply, so like depending on the sunlight, if I wear a white shirt, it's going to glow like I am literally ascending to heaven.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. So now I'm going mostly white shirts for this sort of thing.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah.
Awesome. So I'm just doubling down. Meanwhile, I'm looking like a lobster still. And I know that I normally do in real life, but there's something happening. Because on my camera, I'm just like a light pink. But here, Greg, what would you describe this as?
I mean, I already said bit by a radioactive lobster, and I'm not going to pull away from that. You know what I mean? Like, that's what happened to you. At first, I said, oh, no, it was, wait, no, yeah, no, that's right.
Tomato.
I'd say
tomato. Oh, that's what it is. You said lobster. I knew it was
Tim,
something.
What if you change all the lights just to normal colors?
I did it yesterday, Kev. I turned it, and it didn't do anything. I'll do it for you right now, though.
And then
what
turn
color
the
do you
camera,
want?
Let's go with daylight, and then turn the camera on and off.
That seems like
way too warm. That's not daylight.
I hit.
You went tungsten.
Energized.
Oh,
nobody goes tungsten.
Nobody goes tungsten.
It's weird. It looks like it's black and white behind you. Turn the camera on and off.
Do y'all remember Illuma Ring?
Hey, it's me. It's Greg. Like, I remember the Nuva Ring, that birth control?
Illuma Room.
Oh, I know about Nuva Ring. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a projector behind you. This is to make your entire room a screen.
No.
I remember that this is a thing that existed. I don't think I ever actually like put it into market. But it
was right when they were like talking about Kinect. It was in between the two Kinects. And it was before the HoloLens.
HoloLens, yeah.
Before HoloLens.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like a cool idea if you had all this stuff, but like they never actually did anything with it.
Oh, Imran, it was a cool idea. And me and Kev are living our best fucking lives right now having it with Hue lights, okay? When we play games, all of these lights interact. It's fantastic. Anyways, speaking of games, this is the Kind of Funny Games cast. What's up, Kev? I will let you finish.
It looks insane right now. It looks like it's Photoshopped and they took out all the colors except for blue and green. It's really cool. And you still look red as shit.
Like, Tim looks like he's in like some kind of spaceship from Black Mirror right now.
It does look like a Zoom background, yeah.
I was going to say it looks like an action movie cover, like poster. Yeah.
Sure.
I'll take it. This is the Kind of Funny Games cast. Each and every week right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We get together to talk about video games and all the things that we love about them. You can get the show on YouTube. You can also get the show ad-free by going to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can also be a Patreon producer there, like James Hastings, Sancho West Gaming, Julian the Gluten-Free Gamer, Delaney Twinning, Jeffrey P. Long, Jesus Barrio, Skin Tight Salmon, Game Jumper X, and Muhammad, we appreciate all of you very much. If you'd prefer to listen to us, we give you that option as well. Just search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Games cast, and we'll be right there for you. That's really all the rigmarole stuff that I got to do. How are you gents doing?
I'm doing good.
Chilling.
Great. Blessing, how are you?
In the land of Discord and Zoom calls and like social distancing, that like an open-ended question is the worst kind of thing. Everybody's like, oh, who goes when?
I'm doing Blessing. All right. I'm playing some video games, you know?
Liar.
Yeah, man. There's this game that I've been playing for the last couple of days called Rogue Company. Okay. And I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with this one. This is one that was shown off during that last Nintendo Direct Mini Partner Showcase or whatever it was called.
How can we forget?
Oh, how can you forget, right? And it had like a very quick trailer. It looked like a very generic shooter. And to be fair, it is a very generic shooter. But yeah, it's out on like Switch and PS4 and pretty much all the platforms.
This is the one they doubled down on and they did like two different trailers for, right? During the thing?
Maybe.
I remember this. This guy hacked Jeff Keighley's stream, right?
Yes, Jeff.
And he's like, oh my god, glitch.
Yeah. So this is a game that's coming out of Hi-Rez Studios, and Hi-Rez, they did Paladins, and I think they might have also did Realm Royale. They're kind of that studio that like sees trends happening in like multiplayer shooters and kind of just goes after them and kind of just like makes their own. I don't want to say generic because I feel like that's a mean way to put it, but
I mean, Paladins is generic Overwatch. Like, there's not a real whole lot. There's not a good way to get around that. Like, maybe some people like it better, but it is Overwatch without the Overwatch style.
Yes. And so I kind of peg them as that studio. And I think that works pretty well for them. The fact that they're like, oh, yeah, we have Paladins, which is just our Overwatch. We have Realm Royale, which is our Fortnite. And I think the thing I will say about Realm Royale is that I think Realm Royale, when it came out, was pretty unique. Like, it added some unique elements to that Overwatch, to that Fortnite formula, right? Where it's a battle royale, but it's meant to also have the style of something like World of Warcraft. It has like a class system where you can pick the kind of character you want to play. And also, like, the environment itself had a lot of diversity in terms of, hey, over here in this map, over here in this corner, you have like your snowy area. Over here, you have like your green area. Over here, you have this. Over here, you have that. And when you die, you turn into a chicken. Cool stuff. I played a little bit of Realm Royale when it came out, and thought it was cool. But then it quickly got overshadowed by Fortnite updating and then other battle royales coming out. So Rogue Company, I saw the trailer and I was intrigued, and so I reached out for a code on PlayStation, started playing it, and it is basically Rainbow Six Siege meets the Last of Us multiplayer, like Last of Us factions. I'm gonna say like 80% Rainbow Six Siege though. Like, it is very much hey, we played Rainbow Six Siege, we like what they're doing here. We're gonna make a 4v4 objective based team shooter where it is tactical. You are choosing your operator. Each operator has different like abilities and all these things. The reason why I also point out Last of Us multiplayer is one is 4v4, but then also toward the beginning of each round, where the rounds are pretty much like capture an objective or like plant the bomb on an objective. It's that type of thing. So the kind of thing you'd expect from a Rainbow Six type game. At the beginning of each round, you are paying for upgrades and paying for abilities before you actually mobilize onto the map. Honestly, game's kind of fun. Like, I was not expecting to play as much of this game as I have been playing, but I've been enjoying it. Has a really interesting, cool style. Has a really great soundtrack. It is very much does feel like a, hey, you know, we played Siege. Hey, we've seen other games. We've seen games like Lawbreakers. We know what people like out of these shooters. Let's just put together the things people like. And playing it, you know, it seems like a very competent game. Like, not amazing.
Oh, what a box quote. It's a very, competent game. Like, with its buttons and controls and movement.
This is a video game you can interact with occasionally for a long time.
But, like, it that's the thing, though, is that it doesn't do anything that's remarkable or anything that's even, like, interesting. But but it's a fun game. Like, I enjoy playing it. It's a good time waster. Like, it is a blast, but it doesn't do anything special, which is the thing I will say about it.
It's free to play, right? Like, not even just during the beta period. Oh, it's a buy.
It's not. You have to buy the game. This is the thing that I had to figure out, because I was very confused, and I might even be wrong about this. But as I understand it. Oh, hold on. I'm going to look this up, because I was looking this up and I was like, because this is why I had to reach out for a code. Because
Based on what I saw, it was like you had to buy a founder's pack to get into the beta. But I feel like the actual final game will be free to play. Huh. I think.
See, I've been thinking that I've been playing the final game. And so I don't know. I there, the messaging on this is not great. But as I understand it, right? I'm looking at a thing on Wikipedia right now that says the early access release was July 20th, which makes me think that, okay, maybe I am playing early access and not the final game, which I thought I was playing. Maybe the final game is going to be free to play, but basically right now they have different tiers of packs you can buy. And so you can get like the standard, like low tier for, I don't know how much, like let's say $15 or $30, somewhere between there. And then you can like get the tier up package for like $15 more than that, and then the ultimate package for $15 more than that, and basically that'll get you access to more skins and more characters you can unlock, because like Rainbow Six Siege, you are buying these operators. Like, with like the standard edition, you get a number of operators you can choose from, which again, like, have different abilities, different perks and all that stuff. Like, different operators change the way that you can play the game, but with like the ultimate pack, you then get access to all of them. And so that's basically the pricing structure right now. But whether or not it's going to be free to play when it finally comes out, I think if it is, that'll be a very good thing for this game, because playing it right now, I'm like, all right, whatever the pricing structure on this thing is, I don't know if this is it. Like, I don't know if paying full price for this game is the way to go, because it once again, like, not doing much special, pretty basic in terms of like the different stuff going on. Like, it is not that deep of a game, but again, so
why,
like, it's fun.
Why are you playing it instead of Rainbow Six Siege?
It's something different, you know. Like, I've played so much Rainbow Six Siege that I feel like I've gotten to that point where I'm like, I know what this game is. Like, I'm playing it, you know, for the fun and all that stuff. But I think the thing that keeps me coming back to this game is the fact that it seems like it's a twist on that. And so it's third person. It's not first person like Siege. Okay. It's somewhat tactical, but not as tactical as Siege. Like, this feels like a casual version of Siege. And so, like, it is giving me more of a laid back experience than that game. And that's doing it for me. I think, like, that's the thing that I'm coming to this game for, is not kind of turning my brain off and just shooting shit. And that being fulfilling.
Are you playing on PS4 or?
PS4, yeah.
Okay. Does it seem like a game that would scale well for Switch? Because they've been showing it on at least two Nintendo Directs now. So I don't know if that's going to be a game that I would play necessarily, but if I did play it, maybe I would try it on Switch.
I think it would run fine on Switch, because it's not like that much of a graphically intense game. Like, it's not blowing the technology to like its greatest limits or anything. The thing I will say is that actually controlling the game, I could see this game playing best on PC. Even on PS4, playing with a controller, I am like, oh man, you're doing like a lot of, it's a third person shooter, right? A third person competitive shooter. And so I'm doing like a lot of switching shoulders. I like the ping is mapped to down on the D-pad, and I legit sat in the settings and I was remapping my controls, trying to figure out, like, okay, what's the best way for this game to play? Because it seems like for a competitive third-person shooter like this, I don't think there's necessarily a science for how that game should play. And so, like, right now, the default controls are, like, R1 to switch shoulders, L1 to do your gadget. To do your special ability, it is, like, L1 and R1 together. It's stuff where it's like, all right, this probably would work a lot better on a keyboard and mouse. And this is me saying that as a console player, as somebody
traitor,
who prefers
you're
controller.
A traitor.
But like, it's so complicated in this game in terms of the way it controls, and I can't imagine that being much better on Switch, especially if you're playing handheld on Joy-Cons. That sounds like almost a nightmare for me.
But speaking of playing things on Switch, Blast, what else have you been playing?
Oh man, I've been playing some of that Donkey Kong Country as part of Nintendo Switch Online.
Hell
what
yeah!
A great
How
game,
are
man.
You?
I've made it to, I think, like the third map or maybe the second map. I've gotten a couple of levels past the train. You know what I'm talking about, like the cave, like you're going minecart? Through the minecart. Yes, minecart is what I was thinking of. The minecart level. I'm like a couple levels past that. And man, this game has a difficulty jump that I forgot about.
Dude, the difficulty jump in Donkey Kong Country is where the save points, Donkey Kong Country 1, is where the save points are located. Like, there's a stretch somewhere around the second island that straight up, you need to get through about 3 or 4 challenging levels, like straight through without like getting a game over to get to that save point, or else you're going to be doing them over and over and over. Oh, yeah. It's going to be real, real frustrating, because I think one of those levels is a minecart level that really tests your patience.
Dude, that minecart level is difficult.
This version has save states and rewinding, though.
And then there you go. Then you're good.
I've been trying not to do that, and I finally gave up, and I was like, "All right, no, I'm doing this because fuck that." But yeah, like trying to play it. I'm gonna say trying to play it raw, you know, as one would.
That's some phrasing.
Yeah.
Trying to play Donkey Kong Country raw, man, is an experience, because yeah, like to Tim's point, game is difficult, and there are quite a few levels where I found myself actually like depleting lives. Especially because in that first map, I got up to like what 10 or 11 lives. I thought I was doing real good, but yeah, that minecart level plus some levels that come after that. Oh man, it's a struggle. It's a big struggle, but fantastic game still. Like I've been having a blast going back to it.
Yeah.
Which is your favorite Donkey Kong Country game, Blessing?
See, I've only played through most of Donkey Kong Country 1. Donkey Kong Country 2 was a game that was at my friend's house that I'll play there. And I think the same with 3. And so, like, really only, like, DKC is the one that I refer back to. And even Donkey Kong Country, this is going to upset you. As a kid, I had the Game Boy Color version. Oh. I didn't have the Super Nintendo.
The music was so bad in that version.
But I was all about it. But yeah, like, I didn't have a Super Nintendo growing up, and so I played those games at a friend's place, and so I didn't really get the full experience.
2 is the only one that can kind of hold up to Tropical Freeze.
Mm-hmm.
But like, 3, a lot of people will defend 3, and I'm like, I don't remember 3 being that good, so I'm eager for them to put it on this list. I don't know, this SNES online thing, and try it out again, because I remember it being like a really pale imitation of 2.
3 is demonstrably worse than 2, even 1. 1 has its quirks, and I think a lot of them is more pacing than anything. And also, it's like way, I prefer to be Diddy almost every single time over Donkey.
Really?
And I feel like that's why I enjoy 2 so much more, is that Diddy and Dixie both feel equally kind of viable in most of the situations. And then they add Kitty Kong in 3, and they mess everything up. But yeah, Tropical Freeze is just, it's a masterpiece. And I would argue Donkey Kong Country 2 as well. So I'm eagerly anticipating them bringing it onto this. I'm baffled that they're all 3 aren't already on the service, but to an extent, I'm kind of happy they did it this way, just because now I'm actually replaying through 1 in a way that I totally wouldn't have done. I would have just skipped straight to 2.
I mean, here's the thing. The service is actually pretty good, because I've been playing Kirby recently with my girlfriend, and you can play it online, and it's so easy, and people are able to drop in and drop out, and it's this way to play these games that I was never able to do as a kid growing up, because I didn't have anyone to play like Kirby with me. But if I wanted to play Donkey Kong Country online, I could. And it's ridiculous that they just kind of have this cool service that they kind of underbake in a lot of ways, that it should have every Donkey Kong Country game. It should have ActRaiser and all that.
Where is right Earthbound?
Now.
Like, that's the one I'm waiting for. Because I love really Earthbound.
It's on the SNES Mini, so there's no reason it shouldn't be on this already.
It's bizarre, man.
It's ridiculous.
Do you guys, speaking of this kind of, what do you guys think is going to happen this year with the service? Like, every September, we've pretty much gotten some type of increase, whether it's here's the Nintendo games, here's the Super Nintendo games. Do we get Game Boy games this year?
Ooh.
Hmm.
What do you say, Greg?
That'd be awesome.
I said, ooh-wee.
No.
Here's some Game Boy games.
I can't think of what they could possibly add that would be like, because they seem hesitant to go beyond SNES and just general. Like, they've not put any more minis. They haven't put any more like virtual console style games. They've even slowed down the existence of these games down to like the quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't think of what they could do aside from maybe like another Tetris 99 style thing of like, here's some more just free games that come with your subscription.
Yeah, I'm kind of with that too. I don't necessarily see them doing a whole big, like, I feel like we get the Game Boy Mini or the Game Boy Special Edition, like whatever that actual physical item is. I think they would want to introduce that before adding those games to Nintendo Online, because if you add them to Nintendo Online, then I feel like there's way less of an incentive to want to actually buy whatever the Game Boy Mini could actually be if it comes out. And so, like, if that's not the case, then I could see them adding another game. But I think I kind of come back to the question of how much does Nintendo care? Like, how much does it matter to them that they give you something yearly to be involved with Nintendo Online? Well, especially now that Animal Crossing is out.
The reason they do that on September is because everyone's yearly passes come out, end up in September. So
that's why I'm expecting something.
Yeah, I would say something.
I mean, that's the thing, is like, I'm between N64 or Game Boy, and I feel like N64 is just being a little too wishful thinking. But I also think that would obviously be a much bigger get. The Game Boy games are interesting because it's like, you know, and people might think I'm crazy for this if you're Jared Petty, but like, looking at the Game Boy, just the Game Boy's library, I struggle to come up with like a top 10 that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, there's Pokemon, there's Link's Awakening, there's Mario Land, and then you start running Tetris out of things.
Hey,
and,
man.
And Tetris. Yeah,
Yu-Gi-Oh,
but it's like
Dark
even
Duel
then.
Stories.
But like, but that thing is like, I feel like where the Game Boy and specifically Game Boy Color really shined was more just like those random, what game did you grow up with? The Terminator 2s of the world. You know
Terminator
what I mean? It's like, Game Boy is kind of like, I feel very different compared to any of the mainline consoles. And GBA, I think, is a bit more interesting of a prospect, but I don't expect them to jump that far ahead so soon. But
yeah.
Or soon. All of this should have been there since day fucking one.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. It is what it is. Speaking of older games, though, Something I've been playing a lot is Crash Bandicoot 4. I did a first impressions over on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames with Barrett, where both of us got to sit down and play the demo, which was essentially three levels from the game. And I can't stop going back and playing it. Like, wow. Just trying 100% it, trying to like, and because it's like they're pretty chunky levels. Like, it's traditional Crash, but they modernized it in a way that they made the levels longer with more checkpoints. And the checkpoints kind of function to make the game more like a Celeste type experience, where it's almost like rooms to complete. And then once you get to that checkpoint, you're fine. And if you're playing in modern mode, you don't have lives. Like, it's not like traditional setup of after you get four deaths, you get a game over. It's like you can just keep going as many times as you want. So it incentivizes you to try to get all the Celeste strawberries, or in this case, all the fruit, break all the crates and all that. And they're really kind of taking everything that you love from the original Crash games, trying to minimize all the bullshit that people didn't like. And I don't want to talk too long about this because you can go check out my first impressions, but I am blown away by the game so far. It is easily, if it keeps up this quality, going to be the best Crash Bandicoot game that's ever been released. Wow. And like, I understand that a lot of people like don't like those games, but this reminds me a lot of Tropical Freeze or Sonic Mania. And it's like, that's extremely impressive to me, because ever since they announced this game, I was like, this looks like something that I'm into. But I'm now like, wow, this is one of my most anticipated games of this year.
I saw someone online having a complete meltdown that Dr. Cortex is playable. They're like, oh, this totally betrays the Crash story and lore. Like, he's been a villain for so long. I'm like,
Did they play Mario Odyssey? that's a super weird take, and Cortex's levels are super awesome. Very hard. This game is hard as shit, but in a way that makes you want to just keep going back and not be frustrated by it. Like, there's the different levels of challenge. Like, before, in a Crash game, they're not that difficult. There's certain elements, and Crash 1 was very difficult, but otherwise, any real skill level you can play through the game if you just put your mind to it. But what the real perfectionist would do is like have to break all the crates to get the gems, find the secret gems and all that. This game now adds other features where you have to collect a certain amount of fruit and you get a different gem. If you die less than three times going through a level, you get a gem. So there's like a lot of collectibles based around these challenges that incentivize a lot of replay value. And these levels are designed in a way that replaying them is fun because there's a lot going on, and it doesn't ever feel as repetitive as some of the older games. And there's such a great balance between 2D and 3D gameplay. I'm just like pretty blown away, man. Toys for Bob are nailing it, and it makes me so excited to be the type of gamer that I am, that we're getting Crash Bandicoot 4 and Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 within a month of each other, and that Vicarious Visions, Toys for Bob, they're all putting so much love and care into these products and making sure that they're not cheap cash-ins. And this is coming from Activision. Like, the reason I want to talk about it on this show is, like, I am so impressed with how Activision is handling their lesser properties right now. Not the Call of Duties, not the Overwatches and all that stuff. But, like, I don't know how much you guys talked about it on the Games Dailies I'm not on. But such a key part of the Tony Hawk experience is the music. And not only are they bringing back 98% of the songs from 1 and 2, and there's, like, three songs they can't get because of licensing things that they tried to get. They're also adding, like, 37 new songs. And they announced it today. They announced the list. Like, Bless, have you seen this list?
I peeked at it. I haven't actually like gone through and looked at all the different songs on there, but I think I saw A Tribe Called Quest.
They got Can I Kick It from A Tribe Called Quest.
Dude, that's awesome.
Like,
that's
are you amazing. Fucking kidding me? So but what I love about it is they actually went back and got the music supervisor, Brandon Young, who worked on all the other original Tony Hawk titles, to come back and help curate this soundtrack. And they worked with all the new this generation skaters to make sure that they're getting songs that represent their taste currently, as well as going to a lot of the classic skaters that we know and asking, hey, what should have been in Tony Hawk 1 and 2 that wasn't there, and Can I Kick It got brought up. And so, like, cool, we'll get that. But it's cool because I was reading this thing where it's music from the 80s all the way to the hits of today. It's further represented through songs from over half a dozen countries and genres. So, like, they're going through this multi-language songs in this. I'm like, this is just so freaking rad that a new generation is going to get to not only play these classic games, but understand the music that made them so special. And I'm stoked about it because I'm going to get some new music introduced into my life. And it's, I feel like it's been a while since I've had this type of curated care put into music in a video game.
Do you think I'm just not looking in the right place, but do you think this ends up being the return of Tony Hawk Pro Skater? Like, do you think this is what sets the future of what the franchise could be in terms of what a new Tony Hawk Pro Skater game could be following up on this?
Yes, if. And that if is, it feels as good as Crash 4 feels. And based on that, I think it's going to. I need to get my hands on Tony Hawk before I can actually give it a definitive answer there. But it really seems like these guys care. These teams care, and they're being given the power to kind of make the decisions to make these games matter and set up for a future. Like Insane Trilogy ended up turning into Crash 4, right? So I feel like with Tony Hawk, I imagine we'll get 1 and 2 if it does well, when it does well. It will get a 3 and 4, and then at some point, I don't know, Thug? But then after that, I imagine they'll move on to their own, like a new thing, and that's quite exciting to me.
Yeah. You don't think that you think they'll keep remastering rather than if 1 and 2 are a success, and they are, that it'll just be enough to go straight to making a new Tony Hawk?
Well, looking at the where these teams have kind of done over the last couple of years, they went from the Insane Trilogy to Spyro Trilogy to Crash Team Racing Remake. Like, I kind of think it makes the most sense to keep going back to the well for as long as the water tastes good. Okay. And like, there's still a lot of good water in there.
I was going to say,
if this makes sense, because
you know, what is the water left? Because I feel like with Tony Hawk Pro Skater, right? Right now we have 1 and 2. I think a smart thing, or maybe this isn't a smart thing, but I was going to say, like, a possible thing though could be, hey, +3 expansion, +4 expansion, and then from there.
Ideal to me.
Like, I think that could be awesome. I could also see a world where they go, all right, let's just release Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3+4 as like a separate follow-up game. But at a certain point, I feel like they kind of run out. Like Thug, even though I love Thug, specifically Thug 2, I don't know if that's one of the ones where they go back and really put in the work. Because like those games, I feel like historically, even though like they're great, people aren't like crazy about them the way that people are crazy about Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
I think they are, specifically Thug 1. I think the Thug really found a like more mainstream appeal than we give it credit for. Like, there's definitely the nostalgia, obviously, for Tony Hawk 2 specifically. But I think that like 3, 4, and Thug being on that PS2 generation has just gotten so many more people's hands. So the way I see it, ideally, if I was at Activision being able to make these decisions, exactly what you said, Bless. 3 expansion, 4 expansion. But then the next game would not be a Thug remake. It would be a new game that is just Tony Hawk's Underground. And it's a modern new game that's taking the kind of like RPG elements and story elements and stuff of Thug, but presenting it for what it would look like today. But that, at that point, would be going up against Gate 4.
I still see memes about Eric Sparrow today. So like, people do associate their like Tony Hawk love with Thug primarily.
So speaking of Skate 4 and speaking of all these skate games in general, a game that I forgot I was playing is Skater XL, which came out, I think, yesterday.
Is that bad?
I booted up last night, and I am very underwhelmed by it, is what I'll say. But like, I respect what they're doing with it. Like, I really respect them for going for what they're going for, because they really got like the bare essentials down. They're like, hey, we are making a game where you fuck around. It's a sandbox. You can like go to different maps. And what we're here and what we're trying to nail is the physics and the feeling of skate, right? Like, we want the right analog stick to be your right foot, left analog stick your left foot, you know. And they really they go so hard with it that in a lot of cases, I feel like the game actually controls more difficult than Skate, at least Skate 3, because Skate 3 is the one skate game that I played. I find it way more difficult to land my tricks in this game. I think they went pretty hard in terms of making it feel as simmy as possible. But I say all that to say that there's obviously this renaissance going on right now, or maybe renaissance might be the wrong word, but this comeback of skate games, or this attempt at a comeback for skate games between Tony Hawk and what will be Skate 4 and Skater XL. And
there's something
Session.
In the air.
There's something in the air. Everybody wants to be on these boards that have wheels on them. These nuts.
Crossing on these skate nuts.
But yeah, with all of that, like, I feel like a game is going to reign supreme out of all of this. And like, if I had to make a bet, it would be the game that, like, if what you're saying actually comes to fruition, right, and they make a Tony Hawk Underground that is from the ground up, like, we're not doing a remake, we are doing a reboot, and it is like, hey, it is Tony Hawk, you know, but with RPG elements in this open world, and we're really like going hard with this, I could see that taking the cake. Like, I feel like that is such a good middle ground of, hey, you got your arcade-y, your the arcade feel of the Tony Hawk Pro Skater games, but RPG elements that all the gamers love nowadays. Also, like, these open spaces that you can explore and do your thing. And, like, that sounds like the ideal way, I feel like, for one of these games to go.
Yeah.
Do you think it runs into, I understand that it feels like skate's back in the air. And I mean, skating, you know, not the game skate, but like all this stuff. Do we run the risk of going back to when it was like, man, we haven't had a Guitar Hero in a Rock Band. Here they are. Oh, we don't want either of these. regret this. Sorry.
And honestly, I hope that I'd be wrong about this, but the thug pitch I just gave, I don't think ends up being a good game.
Really? Like, I think that's an awesome game.
I mean, I'd love them to make that an awesome game. And again, I'm speaking real early right now, even just with what I played of Crash 4. I'm like, okay, they could make this old thing feel new again, but still make me realize why I loved the first ones. Like, that magic's there. Tony Hawk is just such a specific thing where it's so arcadey, and the things I love about it are so specific that I expect this 1 and 2 remake, and if they give me the 3 and 4 stuff, to be kind of everything I'm looking for from this. When Guitar Hero and Rock Band came back, they made all these changes. And it's just like, I don't want that. I don't want to play with 2 levels of frets on the guitar.
That's Guitar Hero. I think, didn't Rock Band come back with like the exact same fucking campaign? You're like, how does this not change?
Yeah, but even with that, though, they failed because it never felt like they didn't add enough, and the package that they gave didn't feel like there was care put into it in the way that with Tony Hawk right here, I'm like, oh, they got the original songs and they're doing all the stuff. Like, there's just so much love being put into it. Whereas Rock Band felt like it was just kind of like, not even a greatest hit. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, here's this hodgepodge of what you remember from it. And it was so complicated to get all your old songs back together in one place and all of that. Whereas with this, it's like, here's the package. Let's go. I hope the demo comes out August 15th. So,
I mean, so like soon. The plastic instrument genre died for a reason, because people stopped having room for that and less interest in playing it. Unless something goes really wrong with skating, it's ideally just discs. So it shouldn't be a big issue of like, okay, cool, the new Tony Hawk 3 and 4 is out. I'll play that. I'll download that on PS Plus, or, you know, buy it for $20. That
with the new Ride controller.
Oh God, Ride. Remember, I forgot all about Ride.
This board is full of technology. Thanks, Tony. Great, great comment. Thanks.
All I remember about Ride is that one trailer they showed of like a 2 seconds of a dog using it. And I'm like, okay, why did you guys think this is a smart way to show this game off?
All right, moving on a bit. Greg.
Yeah, buddy.
You have been playing Grounded. And I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on this, because I saw some tweets about it, and like the hubbub all around the internet is that this game is of a bit more consequence than I would have given it credit for, based on the Steam concurrence, based on the even just the Xbox kind of excitement about it. What's your
jump? It jumped to the top of the Steam charts. And then obviously it's on Game Pass as in-game preview on Xbox Game Pass, which is how I'm playing it. It's been interesting. When it first got announced, and Obsidian's like, you know, they just put out Outer Worlds, or were just about to put out Outer Worlds, and then they're like, hey, on top of that, we're doing this thing. And you open it up and it's like, what the fuck is this? And it was like, all right, cool, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, that's cool. Obviously, exploring the backyard, being a small kid, having your giant juice box, and having your giant baseball and all that stuff. All right, fine. And then I remember watching it, and they were like, and it's a survival game. I was like, no, I'm not about that life. That doesn't, I don't starve was like enough for me. And then like since then, the survival aspect of a game, and people keep saying Rust, and they keep throwing stuff out like that. I'm like, that's just not my jam, or even Ark, right? I was, for some reason, getting closer and closer in that last trailer they showed at the Xbox Game Showcase. I was like, well, I have Game Pass Ultimate. Why not? You know what I mean? I'm in the mood to try something new. And so I pre-installed it and started it last night. And I thought I would jump in, play for an hour or so and then pop over to Persona 5 Royal, which I'm working on. And I was totally had a great time and played it all night long. And when I was starting to wind down, I beat all the single player story I beat the story stuff they have. And it's very clear, obviously, it's a, you know, game preview, early access. So when you get to this point, there's like a pop up like, cool. You've done all the story content that's available. However, you know, you can talk to this NPC. You'll get some daily quests. You can go out and do that kind of stuff and keep exploring the map. Just as I did that and started screwing around, I was like, maybe I'm going to sign off. Andy texts me. He's like, do you want to play? I was like, sure. He joined my game. We ran around for a while screwing around. Like, what I tweeted last night is, and please, if everyone can, and I don't mean you, the you know, Blessing Imran, Tim. I mean, everybody in their cars right now, grab the wheel real tight. I want you all to take a deep breath and hold in and not immediately go to your jokes, your fucking hilarious jokes. It's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids meets Fallout 76. And all the good parts and even good ideas of Fallout 76. Not the bugs, not the whatever, blah, 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 blah.
Like, is there good parts? Yeah, the good bugs of
exactly the good bugs of this one, of having the, you know, the ants that chase you all got the ants that are chasing you. Ladybugs have so many hit points. It turns out spiders are just the most terrifying motherfuckers on the planet. And of course, yeah,
which you can turn off.
They've got a whole bunch of points for their slider. They can you can sit there with it if you're afraid of a spider. If you're afraid of spiders in the menu, you can go in and use this slider to make them less and less scary until they're just like blobs that you don't even have to worry about it if spiders aren't your jam. Anyway, though. Survival for me meant it was going to be this punishing thing that, you know, basically you would die and start all over and it would just be a pain in the ass. And it would be more about crafting your shelter and doing this thing, blah, blah, blah. Like getting into it and playing through the story stuff, like it did exactly what I want out of a good E3 demo, which is it ended and I wanted more and I'm anxious for more. And I want that final game because I thought the storyline that's happening in it is super interesting. You know, you're a kid, you've been shrunk down. There's not like a cool cinematic cutscene or anything to start. You just start. And my character, Willow, is who I've been playing as. She's having this narrative of like, all right, cool. It's just a bad dream. I'm just in. And as you go through, she comes more and more to terms with it before you start running into some NPCs. You start getting audio diaries that, you know, you plug into your contraption or whatever that then play, you know, what's been going on in the world. And you're doing little things. But it felt like I started crafting the tweet later on and thinking about it. I was like, this feels like Fallout, and I don't even mean Fallout 76. It just feels like Fallout of I was there. I started to explore this world. I didn't know I'm at, and it, you know, it pops up and it's like, you've discovered the, you know, whatever red raspberry juice box. Like, okay, cool. And that's on my map now as a landmark. And it feels like a toned down version of that kind of Fallout, a smaller experience of that. Me and these characters figuring out what's going on in the world, getting your first like NPC who's going to be a quest giver and stuff, and having him be voiced and really funny and really interesting and wanting to know what went wrong and how I got here and what exactly the experiment was. Like, there's all this stuff going on. And then on top of that is the crafting aspect of it, of I'm picking up a whole bunch of stones. I'm picking a whole bunch of leaves, right? I have this pebble and I take the pebble back to these little, again, you're little, but these little like science huts, and you put it into the analyzer and it analyzes it. And that then gives you recipes to make things with it. And you can do this at the hut, you know, three items you find every 15 minutes, but then there's other huts you could run to. But it's, you know, I did it. The game starts going through and I find this giant walkie-talkie like device. And I jump on the big button and it starts doing something, but two of the lasers are blocked, so I have to go fight a bunch of mites, and then I have to craft an axe to chop down the thing. So and it's just like, it wasn't the survival game I'm used to of like, hey, man, you need to drink right now. Like, I had the meter and I had the hunger meters, and my health wouldn't refill if I wasn't, you know, fully satiated. But I didn't feel like gun to my head. And even when it was like, all right, it's getting nighttime, and she's like, oh man, I bet a bunch of bad bugs are going to come, but really scary bugs will come out. I better, you know, do something. I better put down a shelter rather than have to make the whole house, right? I just made a lean to that. Like, I was able to go to sleep, wake up and go back to it. And it seems like it's the right, it's right now. And granted, this is a demo for all intents and purposes, right? This is the right level of survival I want out of this kind of experience, where I didn't feel a time crunch. I wasn't like, oh shit, I gotta fucking drink. You know what I mean? Like, it was, all right, cool. Let's go explore. It did have that Fallout vibe of like, what is over that ridge? Where is that thing? And, you know, the first time I died, it started me back to where the game started, and I had none of my items, and I was like, fuck, I had so many things, that sucks. And sure shit, on my map, I opened it up, my backpack was where I died, ran back there, ran past all the enemies that killed me, grabbed the backpack, put everything in my pouch, and I was good to go. I had everything back to where I was. So it's like, oh, it's not even punishing for exploring. It wants me to go out there and actually see what happens and find out, can I fight this ant? I have this spear. Can I beat this ant? No, I can't. And this ant will hunt me across the goddamn map. But it was fun finding that out.
Imran, you were playing Carrion?
Carrion. So it's been in a couple of Devolver digital showcase things. It's that basically it's John Carpenter
game.
Yeah, it's like John Carpenter's The Thing, except you're playing as The Thing. So it is, you're basically a mass of meat and tentacles that is trying to escape from a lab, and that's the entire story. It is, you're in this lab, you're trying to get out. You occasionally get through these flashbacks of like people in the past, and it's not quite sure what they're getting to until the end. And then at the very end, you do a, like, the idea is that you are trying to escape out of this underground facility. And they're trying to keep you there for very obvious reasons of you constantly eating and killing people.
Yeah.
It's a Metroidvania in concept, but it's not a... So I reviewed this game for PC Gamer, which I think is, it might be up now, I'm not sure. But I think I gave this game like a solid 7. It is not a particularly excelling Metroidvania in a lot of ways. The controls are neat and tight, but... And like killing people and like rushing through and just eating things is fun, but the game is mostly a puzzle game that as you go to room, you try to figure out like, okay, how do I get past this room? How do I get to the next thing? How do I open up the next door? But there's no map and there's a lot of backtracking and the game itself is quite short. I think it came out to about 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, wow.
So you go through and you're being led by the nose until you get lost at some point. And then you're like, okay, well, where am I supposed to go? And it's a lot of going through doors, trying to figure out, well, does this power work here now? Do I need to go through this? And with no map, that becomes a little confusing. And it really harms the sense of visceral consumption that game is supposed to have of you constantly just driving through these areas and trying to kill things as fast as possible before they unload a clip of bullets into you. Like, so I liked it over... I liked playing it. It's a very good Game Pass game, like similar to Grounded. The fact that it's there is like, why not just try it? But I think in the realm of very good Metroidvanias, it's very hard to make a convincing argument to play it.
You saying that it's 4 to 5 hours might actually be the thing that makes me complete the game, because I started it, and bless you, Greg is in the middle of, oh, wow, this is really going.
Oh, yeah.
Always fun. I was about to call the police. I was like, yo, he might choke if he keeps going. But, like, you know, playing it's a Metroidvania, and at a certain point, I was like, all right, within the first 45 minutes of me playing this game, I pretty much get what it is, and I like what it is, right? Like, it is 2D horror, as Tim says, and so you are going around, you're playing the thing, you are murdering all these scientists, and it is really fun to get from point A to point B in that game, because they've really nailed how that thing controls. Mm-hmm. But, you know, me knowing that it was Metroidvania, I was like, oh, is this 10 hours? Because I don't want to spend 10 hours doing this. And so, like, it seems like a really cool... short experience. Like that might be the thing that actually brings me back to it.
It's basically broken up into thirds of like how big your monster is. At the start, you're very fast and you're like moving around just consuming things, but at some point you get like to a middle size that allows you to break through some doors and take over people, which is like a surprisingly fun mechanic of sliding your tentacle through things, and like you can freak out people in a room that has no point whatsoever to do this, of like just sitting in the ceiling, busting out fences and growling from the top, and it will cause them to scream and run around. Like, that's fun, even though it's pointless. That's neat. But at some point, you get, like, way too big, and it becomes actually kind of really unwieldy to control, to the point where you don't know which direction... Like, you need to get up a small airway, and you cannot do it easily because both sides seem like they should go up, but only one side does. It's a neat little game. I don't think that I would necessarily say, like, oh, you have to go out and play this right now. But if you got Game Pass, give it a shot and see. You might. It's a nice little game you can finish in a night.
Speaking of this, I also played Devolverland Expo, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but basically during the last Devolver showcase where they did the whole bit where, you know, it's a Nintendo Direct, but there's murder happening and all this different stuff. They introduced like this game called Devolverland Expo, which was available on Steam. And basically what it is it's this first person shooter, I guess, but it takes place in the abandoned Devolver Digital E3 booth. And so like you go into E3 and you like look around, and it's essentially like this playable marketing material that's available on Steam. And I played a little bit of it. I got to the part where I got to the Carrion booth, you know, watched the trailer because one of the objectives was watch the Carrion trailer. And that's when I was like,
hilarious.
All right, enough. Like, this is fun. This is cute, but cool. Like, what a weird company.
Devolver's very real war with E3 has been my favorite like narrative over the past 4 years, because they fucking hate each other in a way that's like honestly hilarious from this perspective.
Man,
it's a really cool idea. I when they announced the digital Devolver playable demo or whatever, that was a really cool idea.
Yeah, I wish there was more gameplay in it, because like you do shoot robots and stuff, but it was such a weird thing where I was like, at a certain point, it felt like way more marketing material, which it is. Like, I can't like fault it for that. But at that point, that's when I was like, all right, peace. Like, I had fun watching the Carrion trailer, but no more.
I'm going to be completely real about this stuff. I don't think there is anything cooler than Devolver Digital. And like, I think that the way that they handle all this stuff is so clever and so funny and just so like so oddly specific that it's like it is making jokes and kind of, you know, making very, very clear commentary on an industry, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't understand who the specific group is, because it's not me. And I think it's
me. How is it not you?
I don't know, because when I watch the Devolver
conferences,
I'm always just like, it just goes so Adult Swim and it goes so weird and wacky that I'm like, I don't understand it. I don't understand who. It just proves to me that there are so many different circles within this Venn diagram that we're in, that it is not just the specific, like, one in the middle, then there's the two big ones.
Sure.
There are so many subsects of what we do. There's being a gamer is not one thing. It's not 10 things. It is thousands of different things. Because it's like, I don't know. I am the type of guy that literally wakes up in the morning and goes to bed at night looking at video game forums. I'm a 31-year-old man. I've been doing this since I was 9 years old or whatever it is. And like, I feel like that type of snark and that type of like jadedness and all of it is like in my DNA. And there's just something that, dude, just goes over.
Let me tell you,
man,
I'm the target audience for all that. Like, like last year, Devolver Digital was probably my favorite publisher. Like, if you look at their games that they put out, right? Like, because Katana Zero last year, I adored. Ape Out, I adored. Gato Roboto, I adored. Like, Devolver Digital in general is a publisher whose games I generally fall in love with. Like, they have this good balance, and this all kind of aligns with what Imran's review of Carrion is, right? It's this Metroidvania game that lasts for 4 to 5 hours, that is like this weird, that has this weird gimmick of you playing the thing and you just murdering a bunch of stuff, and it's very stylish. But like, you know, it's this quick get in and get out thing, right? And that kind of aligns. Like, Katana Zero is also like 4 hours long. Mm-hmm. Gato Roboto is like probably like a 2 to 3 hour long game. And they're all these stylish 2D games that are retro throwbacks, but that are also like very fun to play and very competent in their gameplay. And like, even my friend Pedro will be another one to bring up here, even though I didn't love that game as much, still like falls in line with the, you know, super stylish, like has a lot of attitude, but like is a very quick play.
Did you say Hotline Miami?
Oh, Hotline Miami. Yeah, that's it.
Right, like, really, that's Devolver distilled. And just
yes.
I want to be clear. I'm not at all talking about the games. I'm only talking about the marketing.
Like, yeah. Marketing. Like, I played that Devolverland Expo for whatever reason. Like,
it's brilliant.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what compelled me to play it.
Whereas I think that there, I don't know. I hear what you're saying to an extent, Tim, right? Is there the Devolver fanboy? Is there the person that, like, ride or die, understands and loves Devolver and watches every one of the conferences and, like, I don't know, has that connection to it the way you have the Nintendo, the way that I have the PlayStation, the way that Blessing has to Roman Reigns and the WWE?
Oh, my God.
I don't know, and I can't speak to that. But what I know is that everyone respects them for making wacky-ass shit. I know. And, like, that, you know, their conferences for being satire of what a conference is, right? Of selling their loot coin or whatever the hell it was, the Bitcoin knockoff thing they were making fun of, to have Nina Freeman be this hired crazed actress who, well, not an actress plays this crazy character named Nina Freeman, and then they put her in the PlayStation 5 fucking rundown of like all the real heads of different companies and developers being like, this is PlayStation 5, this is what, and she pops up because no one at PlayStation fucking knew or paid attention. Like, that's brilliant, and that's like such a joke that
totally,
even if we don't want to do the reacts to the Devolver conferences, because I really do feel it would be like reacting over a Kids in the Hall episode. Like, I think at the end, you still get the jokes out of it and the distillment out of it and what they were going for and like what they did.
Like, absolutely. I guess I want to be extremely clear about this, because I don't want any single person thinking that I'm talking shit. I am not. It is nothing but reverence. I don't feel cool enough to get it. Sure. I feel like there's a problem with me when it comes to this, because I love the production value. I love the effort. I love how much they give a fuck. And also, they're promoting dope games. They're trying to do something unique to promote dope games. I love all of that. I'm just extremely jealous that I feel like this should be for me, and I'm too stupid to fully comprehend or have the patience to get. I don't know. There's something there. But anyways, keep doing you, Devolver, you crazy motherfuckers.
They feel like the irony poison brother of Arcade Crew. Like, those kind of games and that, like, marketing of, like, today, like, here, just let the game talk for themselves. Then Devolver's like, fuck that. Let's do a whole fucking show that's, like you said, it's like the Too Many Cooks special on Adult Swim.
Yeah.
Taken to 11.
And that is like 20 minutes of content and then like 3 minutes of them of actual games being shown. And it's like, all right, man, like do your thing. And to Tim's thing, right? Like, I think even for me, as I'd say, all the stuff that they're doing with their conferences is for me. I feel like with the last couple, they've not necessarily hit the mark 100%.
I think this year wasn't written that well. And like I've said on Twitter, it's too self-referential. They're getting a little. This is what happened to Adult Swim after a while too.
This is my point. Who is this for then?
I'm curious to see like the amount of people who really dug this last one. Like, even the people who would be in the target audience for this last one, because I feel like somewhere along the line, they've kind of missed the mark of feeling as fresh with it. Like, the first time they did this, I was like, okay, let's go. Like, they've really done it. You know, Nina or whoever the lady is on stage is killing people. It's great. They did the same thing again the year after, and I was like, great. And they've kind of kept doing it, and I feel like I don't know if there are people out there that after the last one were like, oh yeah, man, like I'm Devolver fan number one for this one.
Nina Struthers. Nina Freeman, you. Of course, she makes video games. Like, I'm very confused there.
Yeah.
You can only be a young revolutionary upstart for so long before it starts getting a little rote. And I think like that's kind of where Devolver is going with their shows of like, okay, cool, the satirizing E3 thing. That was funny the first three times. Now there's no E3, so now you're just kind of like poking at a thing that we know somewhere exists, but we don't see.
Yeah.
Video games.
And we're going to talk a lot more about video games in just a sec, but for now, let me tell you about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Lumen Skin. Here's the thing. We don't think about our skin enough. I know I definitely don't. My entire life, I knew I was oily, but I didn't really know what to do with it. I'm always just kind of putting water on myself constantly and just hoping that that'll solve the problem. Let me tell you, it doesn't solve the problem. Here's the cold, hard truth. Your skin has needs. If you want it to look as good as possible for as long as possible, you need to address them now. We get it. You might not know where to start, but there's a company that's taken all the guesswork out of it for you. Lumen. Lumen's on a mission to help give men the amazing skin they deserve through high-quality, expert-created products delivered right to your door. All their products are formulated specifically for men's skin and made to target skin issues with maximum efficiency using top-notch ingredients like charcoal, green tea extract, and vitamin C. It's not just about looking good, it's about feeling good. You need good skin health, especially as you get older, to prevent long-term damage. I've been using this for my particularly oily skin, but I'm learning now. There's people have dry skin. People have combination skin. You can go there, go to the website, check it out. You'll find what's right for you. It's pretty simple to know. Even if you have no idea where to begin, Lumen makes it so easy to find the right skin management system for you. You can choose from different skin concerns to address or just pick up a simple starter pack for free. You deserve to look and feel your best, and here's where you start. Go to lumenskin.com/kindoffunny to get a 1 month free trial of everything you need to start your skincare journey at home. That's lumenskin.com/kindoffunny to get your first month free. lumenskin.com/kindoffunny. lumin skin.com/kindoffunny. Next up, we are once again, sponsored by Hims. A common issue men face but don't always want to talk about, it's erectile dysfunction, ladies and gentlemen. 40% of men by age 40 struggle from not being able to get and maintain an erection. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing when they can turn instead to medicine and science? You can check out Hims and you can discover the tiny pill worthy of a big celebration. Hims also does all the hair loss and hair loss prevention stuff with Hims. Andy and Nick have been using it for a very long time. ForHims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. Hims connects you with real licensed doctors and FDA-approved pharmaceutical products to treat ED. These are well-known generic equivalents to name brand prescriptions to help you combat ED and hair loss. You can try Hims today by starting out with a free online visit. Go to ForHims.com/kindoffunny. That's ForHims.com/kindoffunny. ForHims.com/kindoffunny. Prescription products are subject to medical provider approval and require an online consultation with a medical provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. See the website for full details and safety information. This could cost hundreds if you went in person to the doctor's office or pharmacy. Remember, that's ForHims.com/kindoffunny. All right, guys. Topic of the show. Topic of the forever at this point. What's next for Xbox and PlayStation? We are now technically at the end of July, but for all intents and purposes, we are in August, days away from August. What's going on? Both Xbox, PlayStation have had their big coming out parties for the Series X, for the PlayStation 5. We know that there's rumors of an August event for both Xbox and PlayStation. Xbox has said every month's going to have something. So what could that look like? What will the August event be? And then they didn't have something for Jim. So
I'm still very salty about that.
Wasn't there an IGN thing that month? But it wasn't like anything big. It was just them talking about something already known.
Xbox just didn't do anything.
They might have a blog post. They might have a blog post that was like celebrating Xbox or something like that.
Yeah, but no, there was no new info. It was just like, hey, here's smart delivery again. The thing we already knew about. Doesn't matter. We're not looking back, guys. We're looking backwards. We're looking forward. What does the next couple months look like on the Xbox and Sony front? Imran, do you want to start?
So, I guess I'll start with what I've heard. That it does sound like, like you said, both have shows this year or this month. From what I've heard, they both have to talk about hardware this month in terms of like pricing, availability, blah blah blah. I have also heard that, I don't know if it's this month or later, but they both do have more software to show. So whether like they do it now or before the launch or even after launch, they both have things that are going to be like, oh shit, I can't believe they're revealing that here. I would hope that they do that sooner rather than later, but I expect that Microsoft knows what deals they don't have, so they know what to prepare for. Microsoft also, if Lockhart is a real thing, knows it is better to show that thing off after Sony says $499 or $559 or $599 or whatever. Like, whatever Sony's price is going to be, it's going to be probably pretty high. Lowest I see them possibly going is $450. So if Lockhart is a real thing and they want to show it off, I think they're going to wait until Sony does theirs first.
So, Greg.
Yeah, buddy.
They're playing chicken right now, it kind of seems, when it comes to price, right?
Yep, 100%.
Do you think that there's a chance that chicken game runs past August?
No. You got it. We got it. You got to get this done, right? You got to put up your pre-orders. You figure like how many of the retail partners have to be sitting there waiting. What is Amazon thinking right now? You know what I mean? They want this done, and this is usually done so much faster, or I shouldn't say faster, so much earlier than this, so much earlier than August in terms of getting this out there. And I think, it's always that it doesn't surprise me, Imran, for you to say that you've heard that they both have big holy shit announcements left in their tank right here, that they still have a few in the chamber, because you have to, right? You're going to give us this medicine. You got to give us sugar with it too, right? You have to, if you're going to give us a shot, you have to give us a chaser. And so if the shot's going to be, hey, here's PlayStation 5 and it's $599, you know, $599 US dollars, like, okay, but you better, on top of Miles Morales, on top of Horizon, on top of whatever else you've got, Bugsnax, you got to prove that, hey, this is the other big thing and why you're doing this. And so I think, honestly, for me, and it's a little bit different with Xbox, but not 100%, but with both of them, this next one has to be about I think you get a full-fledged showcase from both of them, and I think it is, here's the final price, here's the final date, and here are the services that really make this next gen. And I know that Xbox is all about services, and we know so much already about Game Pass and them bringing in xCloud and doing all these things in September even. I still think that you want to show all that and how that works as an ecosystem on the Xbox Series X, what the new Xbox home screen is and how this all interacts together and what it's looking like to make it one ecosystem. And it's the same for PlayStation, where do they answer this Xbox Game Pass Ultimate? Do they double down on what PlayStation Now is? Do they radically change that? Do they change PlayStation Plus? Do they announce that PlayStation Plus is getting VR games on top of this and that you're still going to continue to get this, that, and the other? Like, both of these guys, they've got the headlines, they've got the juice. You need to get out and talk about what could be considered bad news in the pricing, but also what all the fucking loser dorks like us want to know. I want to just show me, what does it look like when a fucking trophy pops on PlayStation 5? What is it look, how, what is the different, you know, ecosystem for that? Is it so much faster? That's the thing, you know, people always write into PS I Love You or even Games Daily, but they're like, you know, man, what would you like to see PlayStation 5 steal from Xbox, or PlayStation in general steal from Xbox? Man, playing Grounded last night, just how snappy the fucking menus are on Xbox, how fast it is to get to anything you want to go to when you know how to get to what you want to go to. Whereas PlayStation, the amount of times I fucking exit a game, tab up twice to tab over to my trophies, and then for no reason at all pulls me back down to the game. I'm like, you motherfucker, just let me go. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of stuff I want to know about these new systems, is that now let's get into the nitty gritty bells and whistles.
Yeah, they still have like a create button they haven't said anything about.
Yeah.
Like, there's rumors going around now that an actual multiplayer games will be hooked into the OS in a way that, like, you can see, oh, so-and-so is racing somebody right now, do you want to join? Without actually having to go into the game to do it. Like, yeah. Those are things that will be cool to find out when they actually tell us, but it's August, and usually when a company has, like, they're a little hesitant about announcing something, I'm always worried that it's going to take like a year plus. Like, remember, they announced Suspend Resume for PS4 at reveal, and it wasn't until, like, I want to say nearly 2 years later, whenever Bloodborne came out, that they didn't actually have it.
Is that true? Fuck, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Wow.
Like, it was not there at launch.
Bless, what do you think in terms of PS Now specifically? Do you think that at this next State of Play, it's going to be talked about at all?
PS Now?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, at the next State of Play? No, like, I think right now the strategy would be to wait and, like, take everything in and see what Xbox is doing. I think at a certain point, like, PlayStation Now is going to have to change. Like, I think at a certain point, they're either going to have to bundle that in with PS Plus, or make some kind of dynamic change with how those systems work. Because, like, at this point, like, I very much expect for Xbox online play to end up being free somehow. Like, I expect that shoe to drop at a certain point, because why not? Especially if you're trying to have your system or your ecosystem all work as one, right? Like, when you have such a heavy PC presence, right? And when you want to have a presence on something like Switch or other systems, you might as well get rid of as many barriers as possible while maintaining reasons for people to want to invest in what you have to offer. And so Xbox Game Pass pretty much speaks for itself, especially Game Pass Ultimate. Now that's going to be getting xCloud, and now that we're going to be getting all these first party games through it, like, that service speaks for itself so well without having to have online play be the big factor for the reason why people want to invest in it. So with the big moves that Xbox is making on their side, I think PS Now, even though, like, right now it's fine, like, it's not necessarily a thing that is losing PlayStation money by any means. In fact, like, it's relatively successful. Maybe just not as much compared to when you look at what Xbox Game Pass is doing. But even still, like, there's not any rush for PlayStation to change things on their side. I think the big question I have for myself, and that I might even have for you guys, is, do you think by launch we see a big shift for PS Now and PS Plus, or is that later down the line?
If it happens, it would be later. I think right now they're pretty much, Sony is locked into this strategy of PS Now is the side thing. They have their own retail stuff to worry about as the main thing. And I feel like the one thing that will always hold PS Now back from a Game Pass style service is that I don't think Sony wants to put, say, The Last of Us 2, Miles Morales, whatever, on those things day one, while for Microsoft, that is key to their entire platform. Mm-hmm. Like, it is extremely important that Halo was there on Game Pass day one. It is not at all important for Sony that Ratchet and Clank is on their day one.
This is the argument we came out of Xbox Game Showcase, right? Solidified is that, and I think Tim, you were in the post show were very clear about it. Of like, Xbox is not fighting the same fight anymore. Like, they are all marching in their own ways. And so, to your question of like, yeah, PlayStation Plus, PlayStation Now being changed up for launch? No, I don't think so, because I do think PlayStation is very much in the mindset of like, this isn't broken. Why fuck with it? Like, let's just do what we did with PlayStation 4, but call it PlayStation 5. Let's be committed to these indies to get everybody ready and then hype up the cool first party stuff we'll have and build on that. And if we're super successful, people will come to us, and nobody, the people who give a shit about PlayStation Now are fine with it. The people who people just pay for PlayStation Plus, not thinking about it. Let's keep that going. Don't worry about it. It's Xbox that had to get hungry and creative and crazy, I think, this generation, because they didn't have these first party exclusives that were lighting the world on fire. So they were the ones that are like, well, let's really get fucking serious about xCloud. Let's really get into this Game Pass business. Let's do that. And now it is a services versus launch or services versus library thing. But I do wonder what PlayStation's response to service would be when they start talking about their UI and what you're getting when you subscribe to PlayStation Plus. But
how long do you think the status quo can stay as far as what PS Plus and what PS Now is? Because I'm with you that right now you don't fix what's not broken. Yeah. But I feel like at this point, right, even though Microsoft is fighting a different battle, at a certain point, like, there's going to be a convergence where people are going to be talking about PS Plus in comparison to Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, you know, because they are such comparable things, and because Xbox is making such dynamic and big decisions with Game Pass. If the status quo on the Xbox side becomes, hey, don't pay for online, you can get that free, but you also get all our first party games, and you get this with our subscription service. At a certain point, PS Now and PS Plus both look like almost terrible by comparison. And like, I know that would have to reflect in dollars and cents
exactly
for Sony to feel the need to change things. But even with that, I feel like at a certain point, you're going to have to change things inevitably, because the way those conversations are going to go are just going to make your service look just pale in comparison.
So counterpoint to that, what's real interesting, and I think doubling down on what I said in the Xbox post show, is that everyone is just in a different race at this point. And I think that with a lot of comments that have been made since the showcase has happened from Aaron Greenberg, Phil Spencer, and just other Xbox entities, it's interesting to look at it where PlayStation is so firmly doubling down on the PS5's a next generation console. We believe in generations. We're going to keep that going. Mm-hmm. And it's not about the services. It is about this console and what the console does and the games that you can only play on this console. And you look at Xbox, and it kind of feels, especially when you look at just that showcase, now that we're a week removed from the showcase, I stand by everything I said about it, but there's one extra thing that is extremely clear. What was the point of the PlayStation showcase? Showing that they truly believe in next gen and games you can only play on PS5. What was the point of the Xbox game showcase? Every single game here is playable on Game Pass.
Right.
Right.
It was a good commercial for Game Pass. It was a fantastic commercial for Game Pass.
But the question mark that gives me, though, is if the point of that showcase was being able to say every single game here is on Game Pass, what games weren't there because they're not on Game Pass? That are going to be on Xbox Series X, but couldn't be in that showcase because they didn't fit the sole goal of what that showcase was.
So that was the thing I was talking about on Twitter the other day, was eventually Xbox is going to come into, I guess I termed it the Netflix problem, where Netflix at one point was an aggregate of streaming content from other content providers like NBC, Universe, like all those other places that had The Office, had all those shows on there. And eventually those places realize, hey, we could make more money if we didn't put it on your service, or we think you're lowballing us for the amount of like value our content gives your service. So they had to say, like, well, in this alternative in the games industry, the difference would be like, we'd rather just sell it for $60-$70 than we would to put it on Game Pass unless you pay us a lot more for it. I think Microsoft is going to, as Game Pass becomes a bigger thing as time goes on and it becomes the centerpiece of that console and like the centerpiece of the entire Microsoft strategy, they're going to have to either start ponying up more to get, like, for example, Cyberpunk isn't going to be on Game Pass at day one, and they have to say that out loud so people don't think that it might. Control, remember when Phil Spencer accidentally like slipped up and said, Control is coming to Game Pass, and their sales cratered. And they had Remedy had to go like, no, it's not. Please don't assume that it is. And then people still think like, oh yeah, I'm not buying it just in case it might one day.
Any day now.
That's going to be a problem for other content providers of trying to figure that out. maybe the solution isn't we're going to put our games on our own service like Netflix ended up doing, but it will become the thing of we're going to sell our games separately, and then maybe when they're done selling, we'll put them on Game Pass, or you have to pay up the amount of value that we would have gotten from selling those games separately that we're losing now because we're putting them on yours. The other alternative is Microsoft does what Netflix does, and they actually make their own content solely for Game Pass. That's kind of what this show showed us of, like, yeah, there was a few third-party things that didn't actually, like, that were from XGS and they were being published by Xbox Game Studios, but they were not, like, I'm going to assume, let's say Dead Rising, the example, that, like, they have Capcom up as a Dead Rising game. If that's not coming to Xbox Game Pass and they wouldn't show it here, they have to start making all their own stuff for it. And that's going to, by nature, change the kinds of things they make. Like Netflix doesn't tend to go above 3 seasons because that, like, at that point, drop-off happens for subscribers. Will they start making more games and service games? Would they then greenlight stuff that, like, Sony is big in narrative single-player games like God of War and The Last of Us? Because those are one and done. That gets you a month of Game Pass subscribers. Doesn't get you a year of them.
So with that, jumping off of that point earlier when we were talking about Xbox Live, you kind of seem to be extremely on the side that they're going to get rid of Xbox Live as a paid service. Mm-hmm. After what Blessing said, I tend to agree as well. But in the last couple of days, Aaron Greenberg was doing a couple of interviews, and he was saying that Xbox Game Pass is not yet profitable. They believe in it, and obviously there's so many different factors and business deals and things that we don't know about that are behind the scenes that aren't apples to apples, one for one, of where the money's coming and going. But as of April 2020, we know there are 90 million Xbox Live subscribers. Why would they get rid of that revenue right now?
Because at some point it kind of sucks for, like, people. So if you're playing xCloud on a phone, you don't have to pay Xbox Game Pass or Gold. If you're playing Game Pass on PC, you don't have to play Xbox Gold. They're telling their most loyal customers, hey, thank you for paying this extra money for buying a Series X. Thank you for being the people who love Microsoft the most. Now give us $15 a month, you motherfucker. Like, that is the yeah. A silly idea in the long run, especially if you're trying to democratize how you can play Xbox anywhere. You can play Xbox anywhere except on your own Xbox, because then it costs you more money.
Yeah, I think that's the exact reason, right? The idea that, oh yeah, I want to get an Xbox Series X, but, like, why should I get an Xbox Series X when I have to pay monthly to play games online versus just playing on a PC where I can just play online however I want? Like, that feels like such an arbitrary barrier on Xbox.
Well, is Greg, this the genius of, like, Game Pass Ultimate, though, is that you roll it into that and then, okay, cool, and you can play anywhere and blah, 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 and then by the time you eliminate Xbox Live, you're already into the $15 Game Pass Ultimate, which is on PC and it's on the console and it's on the cloud. So you're not even thinking anymore, right?
Yeah, don't call it Gold anymore. And it's
this used to include Gold, but now it just includes playing the game anywhere. And that, mm-hmm. then that becomes the one service to rule them all.
So now Game Pass has 90 million plus Game Pass X million plus whatever. And then that's the number that they have. Yeah.
Also, games with Gold stops mattering as much anymore because, like, you have Game Pass. So
totally.
Put those games on there.
Yeah, you get rid of that too. You don't have to worry about that.
So then going back to the Sony side, if they're not going to double down on services, because I agree with kind of the sentiment of the group here, like, that the timing isn't right for that. Their whole statement is hardware and software that is next gen. Greg, what could State of Play look like now that we already know, honestly, so much about a lot of the core Sony IP?
I think it could be a number of things, right? I think, again, PlayStation, you know, if you go back and watch the PlayStation 4 E3 conference, right, where Jack lays out everything and fucking punches Xbox in the face, like, again, they can dress up all the services they already have. You know what I mean? Like, they can give you a number, some kind of PlayStation Now number, and announce that it's bringing in this back catalog of PlayStation 4 games or something to that, right? They can talk more about what they can actually explain what the fuck backwards compatibility means to them, right? With this, it's hundreds of games. Well, it's going to be the most popular 100 game. Like, just fucking be very clear about what backwards compatibility is. You get to touch on this again, even if it was like, we're not revamping PlayStation Plus, but just making the commitment of, you're going to get a PlayStation 5 game every month on top of the PlayStation 4 games that are backwards compatible with the thing and that way and the other thing. But then I think you get into the fun stuff of, what the the menus and the UIs look like. Are these plates on the PlayStation 5 removable, as this was going around the internet the other day? Are there other, what are you doing for controllers this time around in terms of actual colors and stuff, and launch and lineup that way? I think you get into the real nerdy stuff here. I think this is, and in terms of games, of course, like you just said, I think, yeah, you could tease more first-party stuff if you wanted to. I don't think you need to, but you could. Maybe you just have one big announcement, whether that's, something from, a distant tease of Last of Us multiplayer from Naughty Dog. You know what I mean? Something to that extent. It could be something else from a first party we haven't heard from. But then you could go in more with your third-party partnerships, right? Like, I don't know anything that's coming. I haven't heard rumors on top of that. But if it is partnerships, exclusive content, if it is, just more indies that that you want or haven't heard from yet that are able to come out and do it, I think even right now, right, like even today, Drinkbox teased a new game, right? There was the big old blinking eyes gif, and then it was like, yep, if you guessed it, we're on a new IP, excited to talk about it later. And that could mean next year, that could mean at Gamescom, that could mean at the Xbox, that could mean at PlayStation. Like, it could be nothing. It could be they just are excited to show you eyeballs.
But to your medicine point that you're making earlier,
what is the blow,
what's the chaser here? Because if we assume that the cost is going to be high and the hardware and all that stuff's going to be the bad news, or the availability and all that, do you think the UI and all that stuff is enough to soften that blow?
Well, I think the way I would expect them to do it, right, is to follow up in one of their, hey, here's the recap of all the shit you saw last time around. Here's several new games from people you love, whether it be indies, whether it be third parties, whether it be exclusives, kind of thing like that. And then you end on one big announcement of a game everybody wants to see. And I don't know what that looks like, or whatever that would be, from somebody that you have been on pins and needles to see for, hear from, or something from. Maybe that's where, with this whole, if I can, this whole rumored San Diego game that was going to be, is Sony San Diego working on an Uncharted game? And because there was a whole Naughty Dog, working with a bigger another studio. Is that where that happens? Is that where, you drop that at the very end? That is just the Uncharted. It's Sony Santa Monica, then Naughty Dog, and then the Uncharted Vuvuzela or whatever. Fucking somebody swinging through doing something, and just the Uncharted title treatment.
I mean, I suspect Sony is in preparation. Like, they're in a place there. They could do the Nintendo strategy of having one really fucking good launch year, and then kind of like, not coasting is not the right word, but kind of being a more regular system from then on out. If they did do that, this would be the place to do it, because they're in a good position to have their studios ready to launch major things over the next 16 months.
And that's the thing too. You figure if you could, even if you wanted to, like, knock it out of the park and drive this home, bookend it, right, and start with, I would say maybe even start with God of War 2 teaser, and then end with an Uncharted teaser, if that's what the Sony San Diego thing is, an actual thing that people have heard about.
Man.
See, I feel like that's doing too much. Like, I feel like that's asking for way too much. Like, in June, we got so much out of that PlayStation event. Like, we had, I lost count, but like, what, 17 games or something like that are mostly exclusive, or at the very least launch exclusive for PlayStation 5. I think we're also kind of discounting third parties. If you remember, in May, we got that Xbox third-party event that was the next-gen third-party games, and that was a thing that came out and somewhat underwhelmed. But we've not necessarily had PlayStation's answer to, hey, what does third-party support look like for PlayStation? And not just, like,
we did, didn't we? Resident Evil 8, Project Athia, all the Bethesda games.
There's more. Like, they're holding on to some things that I'm, like, really surprised they're holding on to, and I wouldn't be shocked if they showed them soon.
Yeah, and I think there's still so much more to say in terms of what third party, because I feel like we have such a clear idea of, all right, this is what Xbox Game Studios is working on. This is what the first party output for PlayStation is. And we have, like, some idea of what third party next gen games are, right? Like, we know Far Cry, what number are we on? 6? We know what Far Cry 6 is. We know what Ubisoft's got going. We know we don't know much of what EA is doing for next gen. I feel like there's still so many questions. We don't even know what the next Call of Duty is. And so, like, that is something surprised to see at a PlayStation presentation, especially because historically PlayStation is usually aligned with Call of Duty. Like, those are the things I expect to see. But then also, I wouldn't be surprised to get a couple more like PlayStation indies. Like, that's the thing that they've really been going hard on, especially when you look at the June event, right? Like, we got Bugsnax, Goodbye Volcano High, Jet the Far Shore, The Little Devil Inside, Oddworld, Soulstorm, Stray, Solar Ash. And I'm just looking at the PlayStation Indies page that they have on the website. because they've really made it a thing to take ownership, which is nice to see. Like even Fall Guys is on there, where the heart is, and the games that they announced outside of that event, just on Twitter / the PlayStation blog.
That game is super fun, by the way. Fall Guys, I didn't talk about it, but that game fucking rocks.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, Fall Guys is awesome. But yeah, like I think there's a lot of options there. I don't think whatever the next PlayStation event is going to be, I don't expect it to be as focused as the June event, but maybe as big in terms of all the stuff they have there. Like I could see it being more of a, hey, this is just a big presentation of what we have, right? And it could be updates on, oh yeah, more on Spider-Man, Miles Morales. Here's Call of Duty. Here's a Ubisoft game. Here's Far Cry 6 gameplay. Like here, like I can see it being more of an amalgamation of those things.
So with that, the rumors right now are it's a state of play. Imran, you're definitely way more insider than we are when it comes to this stuff. Do you expect it to be state of play? And if so, is it the traditional state of play format? Or do they kind of adapt the June format a little bit more to make it a little more fresh?
I believe it is a state of play. I have heard that they have been... everyone complained about the previous ones being like, why don't you just copy Nintendo Directs? They've been like, well, let's just like... Let's try to form it a little bit more after Nintendo Directs when they were still a thing. But I expect that's kind of what we're going to look is not just, not in terms of like colors and, you know, it's the same voice and the same zoom in and zoom out. It's probably more like, okay, we need to bring things a little bit harder now. Because you can tell they've been trying. Like Resident Evil 3 was revealed at one, Final Fantasy 7 Remake was re-revealed at it. Like they are capable of being big news ones. And now is a good time to unleash one with big guns.
Very exciting stuff. On the Xbox side of things, Greg, what do you see happening at whatever showcase that ends up being?
You mean in terms of games or in terms of services or just in terms of general?
Let's just stick to the games.
I don't know. Like, this is the same thing we keep talking about. Like, I think the fact that they're coming out swinging, both these people, that we're hearing that both of these are going to be big, right? That both these companies have something up their sleeves. You do get into this, what could it still be, right? And it is that, obviously, you know, when do we hear what the Initiative's game is? I don't know. But I don't know if you partner that here, but it's also, we're on top of Jeff Keighley's, you know, what do you call it? The finale to Game Fest, opening right?
Live.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, there's so much stuff to go on there. I think it's the same thing of Xbox having to drive home what this is and what the Xbox ecosystem is. And I think that they have a really compelling argument for it. And I think that the way they, you know, of course, make us take our medicine is that, yeah, all right, cool. The Xbox Series X is here and it costs $500, $599, whatever, right? But we're also unveiling, right, the Xbox Series S here. It is smaller, it is cheaper. It's the price of an Xbox One X right now. And then, of course, don't forget that next month in September, Xbox Game Pass Ultimate gets xCloud, and that's the start of xCloud's ascension to becoming a vital business model for us, where it's been in beta, now it's moving to this, and we hope by the end of the year, or we will by the end of the year, have it be standard that you can access any game you've bought on your Xbox, in the Xbox platform. And so suddenly you have it behind him, right? So you can play all your Xbox games for either $15 for $399 or $599. The Xbox is the best place to play with the most options to play. It's like, this has to be, I think, their pin in it. You know what I mean? We've been able to talk so much and hear, see so much and have so much presented to us. This is where they solidify all the arguments they've made into one comprehensive pitch that everybody can look at and go, oh, I get it.
The final question before we end the show and get into the post show, which will be another episode of Bless Up, our favorite game show. Bless who? Damn it. So close. Imran, we're talking about the Xbox Game Showcase they just did, being focused on Game Pass. Every game there had to be a part of Game Pass, so they weren't going to show anything that wasn't. Obviously, that means that any first-party Xbox title would have been there that we're expecting to see of a major consequence. What third-party megaton, realistic third-party megaton, do you think could be in the August Xbox event?
I've said it before, but I feel like Dead Rising is a good one to actually like trot out again because it makes people remember times they really liked the Xbox. Like a very nostalgic feeling for the Xbox 360. Beyond that, let's see. They mostly tie themselves to games rather than get like new, big things. I think the biggest thing they could probably get at this point, Overwatch 2. Like, campaign? Yeah, I wouldn't say exclusive, but maybe like a big marketing deal, or like first on Xbox, or we have it free on Game Pass. Yeah. If it's free on Game Pass, it would be the biggest thing.
I could not fathom it. I couldn't fathom it. Like, Overwatch is so big, I couldn't imagine a first on Xbox sort of thing for that game. My mind would blow.
What if they did?
I could, man. I don't think so.
I don't think it's likely. I think it's like, so here's the thing. The reason we talk about Game Pass and Sony or PlayStation 5 like being different battles right now is because when Sony won this past generation, they won it by taking the install base from Xbox, from the 360. What Microsoft is trying to do now is they're trying to grow that audience. You can't grow that audience necessarily by taking away from Sony. So that's where that question kind of feels like, I don't know what one exclusive they could wrap up. They would have to make something, I think. They have to kind of hit on the next big thing before it becomes a big thing. So it's like they had to have gotten PUBG before PUBG was already big on PC and then came to Xbox.
Got it. Greg Miller.
And got it. I figured it out, guys. What Xbox will do there, right? It's finally time. And you talk about it. Imran nailed it right there. They attach themselves to games, right? Rather than make them their own kind of thing. We've gone around and around and around before with like, all right, well, Nintendo has a Marvel exclusive game, PlayStation has a Marvel exclusive game, when's Xbox getting one? I don't think they are. Instead, I think what'll happen is, if, and this is, you know, a pie in the sky get hype moment prediction, I think this would be the time, right? How many years, Imran, how many fucking years has it been since we heard about that Guardians of the Galaxy game that was supposed to be going on at Eidos?
That would have been, God, it was like 2009, 2010?
No. That's way too far.
No, maybe I'm thinking wrong. Like
2016?
I think of the Telltale one. Yeah, 2015, 2016.
Like, that's been one of those things everybody heard about forever ago and never heard any movement on. I think you could do a cool teaser trailer there where, you know what I mean?
That'd be awesome.
And it's not exclusive to them. It's just like, hey, this is where we're making the marketing deal, right? This is like, I don't want to say a make good because that's not true, but it's like a, hey, this is how we're playing with Marvel and we're going to have, well, not exclusive content, but a review.
That's my thing about the RE8 thing. It's like RE8's not going to be exclusive to PlayStation, but it was at the event and Xbox didn't have any of those bangers because at the last Xbox event, because they had to have the Game Pass messaging. So at this next one, they can do things that are just alignments, but are still major things, you know? And yeah, I feel like...
They also had that chance in May, and
they
like,
did.
We got,
they
like,
totally
Creed
did.
And
I mean, like, RE8 is a weird,
Bright
like,
Memory Infinite.
Capcom has done this thing for years of they would have one banger at Sony and one banger at Microsoft. Like last year, I think was Resident Evil 2. No, year before last, Resident Evil 2 and DMC 5 at Microsoft.
Yeah.
This year it was RE8 at Sony and then nothing at Microsoft. So I'm really curious. Like, was Pragmata meant for Microsoft? What did they have something they didn't show?
Well, that goes to my point, though, is that DMC wasn't exclusive to Microsoft, which means it wouldn't have been on Game Pass.
Yeah.
So that's why I think if the Capcom game, not exclusive, but just alignment, it would be at this next showcase, presumably this next showcase not being everything.
If it's a big thing. Like, and are we presuming that this next big Microsoft showcase is going to be like a huge thing?
Dino Crisis.
Oh.
Which was tied to Xbox.
True.
We'll see, man. We'll see.
I think
this has been the Kind of Funny Games cast. Yeah. I love you guys so much. We're about to do the post show. We're gonna do the fun game show. Bless who. I've been loving this one. Sure to be one for the ages. For patreon.com/kindoffunnygamesupporters. Until next week, I love you guys.